Good evening, good afternoon, and greetings, and welcome to the third of our series on mantra, on the power of mantra, on the effect of mantra, on the secrets of mantra, and of course on the experience of mantra. And though this is our last and final phone session, this is really just the beginning of the third week, and we're going to continue practicing together throughout the next week, and as well as communicate through the listserv. And I also wanted to remind you that the listserv will be open not only next week, but also for about 10 days after the time that that week is over. One reason for that is that a lot of the time people on these classes have experiences and questions that come up a few days or a few weeks after the course itself is, quote, officially over, that is to say, after the 3 weeks are up. And many of you find that you want to continue practicing with a sense of the community around you. So I just want to assure you that that feeling, that felt sense, as it were, of the community that's been formed around these practices will continue for at least a couple of weeks after we've officially closed the class. But also, as many of you know, it will continue for a while. And you'll experience the presence of the community every time you listen to one of the MP3s of these sessions. You'll experience it when you sit with the remembrance, with the experience of this community. I also wanted to say, because I've been getting some private notes from people who say that they haven't been quite participating in the class because they're not participating in the listserv. I want to say to all of you who are not participating in the listserv, there are about 150 people in this class. And of those 150 people, maybe 20 are actually active on the listserv. I'm enormously grateful to all of you who write in and share your experiences and ask questions and answer questions. But it's also true that those who don't, those who feel more comfortable kind of being silent presences, are also very much participating. And when we practice, we're all of us experiencing the power of one another's practice inside this online virtual community. So as we start, even before we do the mantras, I want to tell you a story, and also we'll just do a speed practice of this. In Tibet, in Tibetan practice, there's a whole series of complex preliminary meditations and mantra repetitions that everybody does before they're allowed to do the advanced practices. It's called a nundro, and it includes 150,000 prostrations, 150,000 repetitions of a mantra, and a couple of other practices. And there is a tendency, whenever we do practices and count them, there's a tendency to accumulate the practices. Hi, guys. I just realized that I was cut off from the call. So I was telling this story about the Tibetan nundro practices, and how all of these students had been given many, many months to complete the practice, and there was one guy who just waited until the very last minute. And on the night before they were all supposed to come to the guru and tell them what they'd done, he realized that he had one night to do all these practices, which normally took at least 3 months if you were steady about it. And he realized that he didn't have a hope of doing it all in that length of time. And then he had a brilliant idea. He began to do the practices with the feeling that every living being in the world was repeating the mantras with him, was doing the prostrations with him. And as he began to do the mantras with that bhavana, with that understanding, he got more and more exalted and more into a state of oneness with all beings in the world. And when he went the next morning with all the other disciples to his guru, he was fully realized. And he said to the guru, the guru said, what happened? What did you do? And he told them that he waited until the very last minute and then done his mantras with that awareness that all beings in the world were doing the mantras with him. So what I'd like to say about our group, our satsang, our sangam, is that when we have the feeling that everybody's practicing with us, it not only enhances our own practice, but it actually gives us that kind of expanded consciousness that is in and of itself one of the goals of the practice. So welcome, and may the gods of the virtual reality of this teleseminar be in favor us to this evening, and may we all hold each other in the highest regard as we continue our practice together. So let's begin again with the opening mantras, and you can take a posture that's upright and comfortable, feeling the grounding through your hips and thighs and sitting bones, really letting yourself take the support of your seat, allowing the breath to bring your body, your torso upright from that grounded base up through the crown. Inhaling and letting the shoulder blades clasp the back, and exhaling, feeling the chest lifting, the lungs opening. And just take a moment or two to be present with the breath, and to inhale with the feeling that you're breathing back into your body any energies that you have left in the various places and with the various people you've been with today. Breathe back whatever belongs to you, whatever you may have left in the hands and hearts of others. And then breathe out any energies that you may have taken on from the environment. Breathe it back with the feeling, may any energies that belong to others flow back to them. Inhale and feel the presence of that foundational energy that we call the goal of the mantra, the energy that we call Shiva Shakti, absolute consciousness, the great embrace of the Divine Mother. However you feel most comfortable invoking that foundational source consciousness, feel the presence of that source surrounding us, holding us, opening us, embracing us, and in every way protecting us, so that the space of our conversation is a fully sacred, safe, and protected space. And we can begin by chanting Om three times, and then we'll chant the mantras that invoke the eternal presence of consciousness as Shiva, as the one who performs the five great acts of consciousness: creation, sustenance, dissolution, concealment of the oneness, and revelation of the oneness. These are the five great acts of Shiva, of consciousness, that take place through every form and every creature in the universe, and which also invoke the truth that this consciousness teaches from within ourselves. In fact, through the power of the great mantra, the truth that connects us to all that is, and that is both the highest reality and the highest knowledge. So, together, inhale. Om. And with this inhalation, this expression of Om, feel that the O sounds in the heart, and the moves up from the throat up into the center of the head and out the crown. Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Ganaswatma Paramarthavavasine. Again. Om Namah Shivaya Gurave. Whoops, wrong mantra, sorry. Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Ganaswatma Paramarthavavasine. And once again, Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Ganaswatma Paramarthavavasine. Inhaling and exhaling, we offer our practice, asking that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May all beings experience equanimity beyond grasping, hatred, and dullness. And may we know the equality of all that lives. And with that offering, and with the feeling that whatever we do and say tonight is being offered for the benefit of all beings, let's begin centering ourselves on the mantra Om Namah Shivaya Om. And as you allow the mantra to inject itself, to infuse itself into your thought stream, see in what part of your body your attention wants to be centered. For some of you, it will feel very natural to allow your attention to float into the heart center. Others will find that your awareness naturally flows upward into the center of the head. Some of you are more centered in the belly. Just find out where your attention wants to be. And without forcing the mantra into your consciousness, begin to hear Om Namah Shivaya Om being repeated with the feeling that it's being said to you by someone who deeply loves you. For some of you, it may feel very natural to think that the mantra is being spoken from within you by divine consciousness itself, by the divine mother, by the divine masculine presence we call Shiva. For some of you, it might feel right to think of the mantra being said to you by your secret lover or by your beloved grandmother or by the teacher whom you love in this life or whom perhaps you have never met physically but sense as part of your energy field. So feel that this person, this being whom you associate with unconditional loving, with the deepest possible love for you, is saying the mantra to you, saying it in a loving, extraordinarily accepting voice, inviting you to feel your way into the sounds of the mantra, to experience the syllables as pulsations of loving energy. Om Namah Shivaya Om. Now, as you listen to the mantra, begin to pay attention to the space inside your field of consciousness, your inner heart-mind space, that's left by the mantra when the repetition is done. So as you think Om Namah Shivaya, Om to yourself, notice the space at the end of the mantra and see if you can focus there. And as the mantra again arises and repeats itself in this very loving voice, this very loving energetic feeling, again, be aware of the space at the end of the mantra and let your attention stay there for a second or two, being very present to the energy inside your heart mind, your mind field that the mantra leaves there, like the subtle footprint of the mantra in your mind. Om Namah Shivaya, Om. And the felt space that arises at the end of the mantra. As you focus in on the mantra and the space at the end, you might also notice that the mantra is both arising and subsiding into this space in the mind, this felt space in the mind. And without trying to force yourself to pay attention to it, just see if you can begin to sense how mantra subsides into this field of your own consciousness, and then actually arises from that same place. And please feel free to continue repeating the mantra, thinking the mantra. I'm so appreciative of the way that so many of you have been articulating how this practice can literally throw your heart open. How really extraordinarily well it does start this transformative process inside your heart mind. And of course that process doesn't always feel blissful. So because of course when mantra begins to flow like this in your consciousness, not only does the love that's your essence come pouring up as if out of the mantra, but really from out of you, but also the layers of woundedness and fear and grief and resistance and boredom and anger, all this stuff that every single one of us has lodged inside our inner body, And we know so much about it because we've been practicing for a while, many of us, and we know that there are these pockets of grief and these pockets of loneliness and these pockets of despair that come, that can literally come flooding out of us as the mantra starts to open us up. Because mantra really is like a key that opens the door to the unconscious. And this, to have the lock turned in the in this door is really the only way that we can come to know what we are and to begin to surf the field of our own consciousness in a way that's I would say spiritually productive. In other words, most of us surf the field of our consciousness endlessly, day after day, year after year, in various unconscious ways, just sort of riding the waves of thoughts and feelings as they come and go, and not even really so much noticing how thoughts and feelings are really kind of cementing us to our feelings of limitation. In Indian thought, in Sanskrit, the word for mind and heart is the same word. It's chitta, meaning the word chitta is, it's kind of a diminutive of the word for absolute consciousness, which is chitti. So that's the feminine, or chit. The feminine form is chitti, and the masculine form is chit. And so Nali, forgive my pronunciation. All Sanskrit speakers, please forgive my pronunciation. My American tongue doesn't do well with the dental T's. So I turn them all into TH's. But the text of Tantra recognize that what we think of as the heart, that is the abode of feeling and emotion, and what we think of as the mind, the abode of thoughts, is actually the same. It's all happening inside the same space of consciousness. And our chitta, our consciousness space, is composed of layers and layers and layers of thoughts and feelings. The name for the discursive thoughts is, in Sanskrit, is vikalpa. And vikalpa means a wave, a thought wave that divides consciousness, that cuts it up, that literally takes the wholeness of our consciousness field and particleizes it, particularizes it. So a vikalpa is literally a thought form that creates the feeling of separation in what is actually the wholeness. And though a vikalpa can be a thought, it's always accompanied by a feeling state, an emotional state. So, for instance, a thought like, I screwed up, it never comes alone. It's not that you just have the thought, I screwed up. That thought, I screwed up, has all sorts of emotions attached to it. You know, sinking feelings, sharp, painful feelings, feelings that if you really look into them, you'll recognize as shame. And in the same way, if you have the thought, Amanda loves me, you know, or Brad loves me, there are feelings that come along with it. And in this case, expansive, soft, tender, joyful feelings, good feelings. And of course, we prefer the good feelings. But in general, the truth is that both negative feelings and positive feelings create separation in our consciousness. So, you know, when you think Amanda loves me, it does not necessarily connect you to the source of Amanda and you. It connects you to a very particular experience that would not feel so good if Amanda suddenly started going out with somebody else, for example. It would, you know, that feeling of Amanda loves me might turn into Amanda's hurt my feelings or my heart is broken. So most, and you all know this, of course, it's, you know, that's just how regular life, dualistic life is. It's a kind of a constant dance, a roller coaster ride of positive and negative and, you know, and everything in between. So when we start injecting into our thought stream words and feelings that are called in Sanskrit shuddha vikalpa or pure thought forms, something quite unique happens. A shuddha vikalpa is a thought that actually connects our consciousness to the wholeness. That's why shuddha means pure. but it doesn't mean pure in the sense that it's a good thought, you know, like a nice person's thought. It means pure because it connects us to that which has never been separated. You know, in the tantric tradition, purity is wholeness. Impurity is separation. So purity, impurity are not pejorative, you know, they're not connected to good and bad. They're connected to whole part, to wholeness or division, duality. So a shuddha vikalpa is a non-dual thought. For example, the thought, just as an example, one pure, unlimited awareness has become all that is, and I am that pure, unlimited awareness. You know, I am that. That's a pure thought. It connects you, and it can connect you in a very deep experiential way, or in a, you know, more intellectually not fully felt way, but it connects you to the deep truth of non-duality, of oneness. So any consciousness expanding thought, that is to say, any thought that causes you to recalibrate so that you begin to identify yourself with the wholeness, with love, with joy, with pure awareness, these are all shuddha vikalpa. And an empowered mantra, a mantra like Om Namah Shivaya Om and the other great mantras, which are literally carrying the source code of unlimited consciousness. They're literally, Om Namah Shivaya Om connects you to the source code. And when I say source code, I don't, you know, I mean the, you know, as in a computer program, the source code is the key to the whole program. So the source code for us is pure consciousness. And the mantra is literally the key to the source code. It connects us and can connect us so fully to the source code that our entire consciousness can be reprogrammed into, over time as we practice with the mantra, into the awareness of our connection, our absolute connection with wholeness. So clearly when a word with this level of power begins to expand inside our mind, our mind space, it can be a little bit like having the rocks in our heart dynamited. I sometimes use an anecdote about a time when I watched some workers dynamiting a rock in a field. They were clearing the field, and there was this huge boulder, and they stuck a couple of sticks of dynamite in it, and then, you know, we all went off to a distance and watched as the rock exploded. And what happened was that all the rock pieces just kind of separated out and flew out for just a moment or two, and then they settled back into the shape of the rock. But in a minute, the rock just kind of crumbled into a heap. But that moment when we saw the rock split apart and then settle back into its shape before all the pieces split away, that's a little bit like what happens when we begin to deeply inject mantra into our consciousness. You know, the stuckness, you know, of our mind field, literally, it literally shatters. And I don't mean this in a bad way. It's like the false ideas that we have are, they receive a kind of dynamite stick that shatters them. And then they kind of settle back into their normal pattern. But the glue that's held them together has been taken out. So little by little, those stuck consciousness pieces are going to start dropping away. And so it might come, so what might drop away is you know, the feeling of that life is unfair. And as it starts to drop away, you might have a big explosion of the feeling life is so unfair. And remember, you know, five or six experiences in your past where something really unfair happened to you. Or one of the pieces that comes up might be resentment. And that's what I've had to work with a lot. I think most of us do. And you start thinking about the terrible thing that this person did to you, and the grievance that you've been holding against that person, and the resentments come up, and it can feel as though for a little while you're just overwhelmed with resentment. And so these are really signs that the rock of your dualistic consciousness is being dynamited by the mantra, and it's a sign that freedom is on its way. When I first began working with mantras, there would be times when, for no reason, tears would well up, and often, as many people have been sharing here, often the tears would be tears of love, tears of gratitude. I would have this just overwhelming feeling of, oh my God, this is so beautiful, and I would cry, and then almost inevitably, after a few minutes, the tears would be there, but the feeling would sort of morph, and I begin telling myself my stories about why I cry. So maybe I'd remember a sad story, or I would remember a hurt moment, and then the tears would no longer be tears of pure love; they would be tears of grief, tears of sad tears, angry tears, just all the different ways in which I cried in my life would come up through these mantra-driven, shakti-driven tears. So, and over time, I got to realize what was going on, and I wouldn't take it so seriously. But then there was a year when I just cried a lot. I cried for days. And I would say the mantra, and I would cry, and then these feelings would come up, and I would actually sort of work with the feelings, analyze the feelings. It was incredibly useful to sort of look at the feeling patterns that were coming up, and I recommend this to you. But then one night I had a dream, and in the dream I'd gone to the University of Chicago to enroll in graduate school, and I and another woman were in our thesis advisor's office, and he was giving us our choice of topics. And he said to this other woman, "Your topic is sadness." And she said, "I don't want to do that topic. I don't want to write about sadness." So I said, "Oh, I know all about sadness. I'll write. That can be my topic." And the thesis advisor looked at me, and he said, "That's not your topic. Sadness is not your topic. Your topic is the abundant grace of the Absolute, which manifests through the mantra and the guru." And I woke up, I was kind of blown away. And when I woke up, I realized that I was being told from inside that the work that I'd been doing, that the mantra had, the upheaval that had been going on, was in a sense not only complete, which it was, that was the end of that period of crying every night, but also that it had been an act of grace. And this is a tremendously important thing to realize as you're working with the mantra, that as long as the mantra is sounding itself in your consciousness, as long as you're returning to it, then the effects of it are the work of the grace inside the mantra. Whether it's love, whether it's the uprush of an emotion, it's all part of the process of the mantra transforming your consciousness. So I'd just like to mention a couple of other things about the way we practice mantra. In this class, we're going to work a little bit with what I consider the kind of shakti essence of mantra, which is, for want of a better word, the pulsation in it, the spanda in it, as we were saying last week about the pulsation at the heart of mantra. And we're going to examine it from a couple of different directions, a couple of different points of view, because part of what I really want you to take away with you as you enter this third week is to have a sense of what modalities, what contemplations, what ways of practicing with the mantra are really going to help you find the juiciness in it in the deepest way. So last week someone sent me a note which just said, "Oh my God, I got it. It's all about the felt sense." And I wrote back, "Oh my God," she spelled it OMG. I wrote back, "OMG, yes." So this is the felt sense, which I talk about a lot because it's very real for me, is a word that was popularized in the 70s by a Chicago psychotherapist named Eugene Gendlin in a very influential book called Focusing. And he had discovered that clients who transform in their therapy all had one particular skill. They knew how to feel into the felt experience of an emotion or an inner state, the way it felt in the body. And he had various, you know, practices that he would have them do when they got this felt sense. But that inner sensation of being able to feel energy touching us inwardly, literally vibrating inside our awareness, is one of the ways that we tune into the primal vibratory essence in our inner experience, what in Sanskrit is called the spanda or the shakti, which is to say the energy that's creating our felt experience. One of the secrets of tantric awareness is the recognition that the state of your mind is the state of yourself. And of course, we now know that the mind is also in the body. So we've discovered that when we go into the body, when we feel, when we can tune into the felt sense in the body, it can actually help us release difficult emotions, understand ourselves better, really experience ourselves on deeper and deeper levels. So what we have come to realize is how crucial to our experience felt body sense really is. But what the tantras tell us is that this felt body, this felt sense, whether we feel it in the mind or in the inner subtle part of our being or in our physical body, it's what we're feeling is always the energy, the shakti, the subtler aspect of experience. And you know, as I've told you, one of the very best ways for allowing the mantra to internalize itself in your field of consciousness is to feel it vibrationally, to get a felt sense of it. But that said, the felt sense, which is the kinesthetic experience of the mantra, as some of you have been saying in the listserv, is not the only way of working with mantra. In fact, because, you know, as you probably know, we all have different ways of processing sensory information. And those ways of processing also apply to our spiritual experience. So if you're very visual by nature, and you can be visual even if you don't think you're good at visualizing, this is something that took me a really long time to understand. I never thought of myself as being good at visualizing, but in fact, I find that if I visualize the mantra, and many of you are having that experience this week, if I visualize the mantra, it adds a dimension to my experience that actually makes it go in more deeply. And if you're more naturally auditory, if you tend to be sensitive to sound, and many people who love mantra practice are people who generally are auditory by nature. But when you're auditory, often singing the mantra is very, very powerful for you. Or imagining the mantra being spoken to you and actually listening to it, letting yourself not so much say it as hear it, that this will, again, deepen your sense of the mantra. So you notice that we're working with different sensory modalities in practicing with the mantra. And I would say also that a person who's very kinesthetic actually does well coordinating mantra with the breath, because breath is such a kinesthetic experience. And when you mingle the mantra with the breath, you can often feel the sensation of the mantra in your body in a more immediate way because of the breath connection. So, okay, let's just take a break here for a moment and allow ourselves to listen to the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya Om. And see if you can have the feeling that this time that people all over the world are saying the mantra to you. Imagine that there are people in France saying Om Namah Shivaya, and hear them saying it in their French voices, and people in Africa saying Om Namah Shivaya. Some of you are in Australia, actually, on this call. So think of the people in different parts of Australia saying Om Namah Shivaya. Think of people in Switzerland and Germany and Argentina and Mexico. People all across North America, Canada, Alaska, Russians, Eastern Europeans, Chinese and Japanese, people all over the Pacific Rim, saying Om Namah Shivaya with us. See if you can imagine Om Namah Shivaya vibrating through all these hearts all across the world. As if everyone in the world at this moment is taking a break from the troubles and the hard work and the suffering and the romance and everything that's going on in their lives, and just thinking Om Namah Shivaya Om, Om Namah Shivaya Om, Om Namah Shivaya Om. I'd like to just ask you what it's like doing that. If anyone had an experience or an insight that you'd like to share with us, or a question you'd like to ask, you can press *7 and speak into our shared consciousness space. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Upendra.
Upendra, welcome.
Firstly, thanks for brilliant discourse. It touched me, especially the last part where you said the technique which you told, imagining it someday, imagining people speaking the mantra. So I imagined Baba Muktananda to me, and I had goosebumps, I had tears in my eyes. It's very powerful. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you, Upendra. Yeah. It's very, very powerful to imagine your teacher saying the mantra to you. Anyone else? Okay, so if you get an urge to say something, I'm going to continue. And you can press star 7 if one of the experiences that's been coming up in the course of this time together tonight or at another time feels like something you want to share with us or ask. So I also wanted to say something about how we work with mantra if we're more emotionally based and or more rationally based, so to speak. And of course, all of us are mixtures of thinking and feeling. So to say that some people are more, quote, rational, logical, and some people are more emotional is a little bit misleading. But again, there are people who really can't get into mantra unless they have an emotional connection to it. So imagining that it's being repeated to you by your inner lover or your teacher, or laying the mantra like a flower in your heart, can be a very, very significant way of cracking it for yourself. I would also say that when you're having a lot of strong emotions, it's incredibly good to take the mantra into those emotions. You know, for example, if you're feeling angry, say the mantra with your anger. And don't worry, the mantra can handle your anger. Just try putting all your anger into the mantra for a few minutes and giving it that, you know, the intensity of your feeling of anger. Or say the mantra when you feel afraid and give yourself permission to cling to it literally like a life rope. Feeling really scared is often a great impetus for doing a practice like mantra. You know, say it playfully when you feel playful. Say it fast. Say it slowly. When you feel sad, say the mantra to yourself as though you were crying. You know, in other words, see if you can just bring Om Namah Shivaya Om into the entire spectrum of your emotional life. When you're looking at your baby and feeling a lot of love for the child, say Om Namah Shivaya Om internally with that. It literally divinizes your emotions. It brings out the underlying divine energy inside every emotion. Another way to practice the mantra, and this is more for those of us who like to contemplate teachings, which I know is all of us in one way or another. So the strongest power in the mantra really does start to come forth as you contemplate this understanding that the mantra, the words of the mantra, the divine state at the heart of the mantra, the light of consciousness in the mantra, and you, your inner self, are not different. This teaching, which at first seems very abstract, very hard to grasp. I mean, how could a word and you and God, because of course that is what the word, what Shiva means, is absolute awareness, God. How can they be the same? It's very counterintuitive. So what I've found is that the way to work with this thought, with this idea, is actually to contemplate it. In other words, to ask yourself, what do you think it means to say that the mantra and the goal of the mantra Om Namah Shivaya Om and Shiva, the absolute consciousness, are the same? What could that mean? In what sense could that be true? And in what sense could it be true that the mantra is not different than me? You know, what is the me that is not different than the mantra? Is it the me that, you know, is it the me who grew up in New Jersey and got married at age 22 and had two children and got divorced at age 30? Or you know, whatever your trajectory of personal experience has been. Is it me, and is it that me whose body is aging, or is it me in a subtler sense? What is, you know, who is it that's, what is the me that's my mantra? It's the mantra. So, in other words, you can't just try to believe the teaching or just try to eat it whole. You actually have to work with it. And if you'll spend a few minutes, and I'm going to ask you to do that this week, just thinking about it, writing down what you think, and then actually stop thinking about it, sit for a moment with the mantra and ask inside, what do you have to teach me? You know, ask the mantra, what do you have to tell me about what you really are? And just notice what's coming forth. Notice what's actually arising inside you as you ask this question. And it's actually that process of contemplating the mantra as, you know, that is contemplating it intellectually, asking yourself questions about it, and then contemplating it energetically, letting it go inside and reveal itself to you, that is going to make your practice of the mantra really do what it can most deeply do. And as you do that, then what starts to happen is that the mantra begins to act like a power in your life. And literally it becomes a, let's say, an arm or a sensory apparatus of the divine protective consciousness that is the power of grace itself. Somebody shared with me a couple of years ago an experience that she had that showed her what this meant, and I'm going to share it with you because I think many of you have had this experience yourselves. She had gone to meet her boyfriend in his office, and she was sitting in the outer office waiting for her boyfriend to come out. She could hear behind his office doors that he was in a very heated discussion with somebody, and their voices kept rising, and she realized that her boyfriend was arguing with a colleague and that they were both very angry. And this very spiky energy was kind of floating through the office. The secretary was looking embarrassed and, you know, shuffling her papers and pretending she didn't hear it. And my friend said that, you know, she was kind of scared for her boyfriend, and so she began to say the mantra, which was this mantra, the mantra that we've been doing. She began saying it very intensely with the thought of injecting the mantra into the situation. And after about 5 minutes, she noticed the voices started to quiet down and the energy sort of shifted. And a little while later, her boyfriend and the other guy came out of the office. They said goodbye to each other quite cordially, and she and her boyfriend, you know, put on their coats and went down the elevator, and he said to her, "Jesus Christ," he said, "excuse me," that was what he said. He said, this really weird thing happened. Alan and I were having a terrible time. We've been having a terrible time all week. I was really sure I was losing it. I was literally losing it. I was starting to call him names. And suddenly this voice came up in me and said, "Just let it be." And for some reason, I was able to kind of rein in my emotions. I said to him, I think I've gotten a little emotionally overwrought here. Let's table this conversation and think about it and have it another time. And we were able to, you know, just kind of end the conversation in a cordial way. He said, "I don't know what happened, but I feel like I was saved." And of course, my friend had no doubt that it was because of her mantra practice. And she said that it really felt to her like a kind of miracle, her boyfriend being a very volatile type of guy who was not in the habit of sort of noticing himself when he was getting angry. But I've seen this happen again and again and again, and so have many of you, I'm sure, that when you're in a situation that's in which the energy is weird or painful or difficult, that very often you, by creating a mantric state in your own mind, can affect the whole situation in a very positive way. And in this way, literally, the mantra becomes a power that goes out from your heart and profoundly affects the atmosphere around you. I did, you know, many of you have been sharing your experiences with your elderly parents. I did this with my father, who was dying. He was in a lot of pain. He'd never done any practice. Nothing that I suggested that he do for himself was really possible for him. And so I would sit next to him and hold his hand and say the mantra. And almost always when we did that, his experience of unbearable pain would kind of soothe itself. He'd fall asleep, or he'd just, you know, feel in a more cheerful state of mind. So this is what mantra actually does as we work with it. It tunes us into the power of Sat Chit Ananda, the power of consciousness itself, you know, Sat being pure being, pure presence, Chit being the insight, intelligence that's able to really intuit the true meaning of things. Ananda being every shade of happiness from, you know, simple contentment to absolute ecstasy. And that experience of the mantra as a power in our consciousness will little by little burn the karmic residues, the karmic contractions that keep us stuck. So mantra literally burns karma. Not only the karma of your actions, you know, your thoughts, but also the karmic patterns of your conditioning, which is to say the conditioning not only the condition you've inherited from your parents or from your society, but the genetic patterns that you're holding. And if you're a person who believes in reincarnation, one of the things the sages say about mantra is that it can burn the karmic conditioning of lifetimes. So if you think of your binding thought patterns, of your binding physical patterns as psychic sediment that's built up in your mind and body, and the mantra as the clear water of awareness that's washing through that sediment, you can understand that every time you spend some time saying the mantra, you're giving yourself a psychic and even a physical bath. I really can't emphasize this enough, because every time you turn to the mantra when you're angry or upset or sad, a part of your buried anger gets turned into strength. And every time you offer the mantra into your grief, it reveals the inner core of grief as love. So mantra can literally show you the divine core inside every feeling, every emotion. So again, let's sit with the mantra. Feel the mantra, hear the mantra being repeated. Consider a situation in your life that feels bound, that feels contracted, that feels stuck. And imagine that inside this situation, inside this problem in your heart, inside this situation in your external life, inside this knot in your family, inside this physical issue, it doesn't really matter what it is, but just imagine that the mantra is repeating itself in the very core of this problem, in the very core of this situation. The mantra like a very subtle fire, a very subtle flame, is glowing in the heart of this problem or this situation or this emotional knot. And as you hear the mantra being repeated, see if you can feel it, feel the divine flame inside the mantra melting away, the tightness and constriction inside the situation, inside the problem, inside the people that you experience as being caught in the situation, inside the knot in your body, if it's that. Just feel the mantra as a flame of grace, as a flame of subtle power. That's burning away the karmic traces that are manifesting as this pattern, as this problem, as this stuckness. With great faith, feel that the innate love, the innate life inside Om Namah Shivaya Om is dissolving the core of the contraction that makes this situation difficult or problematic. So again, I want to encourage you to remember this practice, that when things seem difficult, see if you can think of the mantras as a soothing, illuminating flame that flows inside the contractions and the constrictions in the situation and very gently dissolves them. Sets them on fire, but not a hot burning fire, a very cool, soft fire. Now, in these last few minutes together, I want to talk about what to me is the real payoff of mantra practice, and it comes from one of the most mysterious and important teachings in the great Shaivite text, the Shiva Sutras. For those of you who know the Shiva Sutras, it's the first sutra in Book 2. And the sutra says, Chittam Mantraha, which means the inner consciousness is mantra. So we said already that the Sanskrit word chitta is usually translated as mind. But what it really means is the inner field of your consciousness, the inner world where you experience thoughts and feelings and images. And basically what happens as we internalize mantra is that this field of our consciousness becomes permeated with mantra. It literally becomes filled with the energy of the mantra. And as this happens, and this is especially powerful when you're meditating with a mantra, as many of you know, then you actually begin to experience your inner state, your inner mind field pulsating with a certain, you know, kind of subtle, high vibratory energy, which is the inner energy of mantra. So when you're experiencing the mantra permeating your mind like this, the symptom of it is that there's, and I know it happens to many of you in meditation, there's a kind of shift. And you plunge, or you sometimes it feels like you sink down, you go through kind of a trap door, or your awareness just expands. And instead of being in what, you know, I might call your normal mind, you're in a deeper level of the mind, and thoughts might be going on, but you're not identified with the thoughts. They're going on, but you're inside this pulsing space. And at this point, if you're practicing mantra, the words may dissolve, and you're just kind of in this pulsing experience. Now, when I first began experiencing this pulsation, I had absolutely no idea what it was or why it had any significance. But I would notice that when I repeated the mantra, always at a certain point the mantra would disappear. It just wouldn't want to be repeated itself anymore. And instead, I would be conscious of this kind of throbbing movement in the mind that was like the aftermath, the afterglow, as it were, of the mantra. I've come to realize the inner core of the mantra, the Shakti in the mantra. And what then I would do, I would say, oh, okay, I've forgotten the mantra. I would go back to the mantra. And this is what a lot of us do. We go, what? People will ask the question, what shall I do if the mantra disappears? One day, this was about 20 years ago, I was reading one of Baba's books, which is a commentary on different Shaivite texts. It's called Nothing Exists, It's Not Shiva. And I found his commentary on this mantra, Chitta Mantraha. And what he said was this. He was writing about how when we repeat the mantra, we should understand that the mantra and the goal of the mantra and the inner self are not different. As you can gather, this teaching that I've been giving throughout this course is one I got from my teacher, Baba Muktananda. But this is what he said. When we talk about chitta mantra, when the mind being mantra, he said, what we should understand here is that we're not talking, we're not primarily concerned with the component syllables of a mantra or its deity in the usual sense. Mantra here refers to the very mind, particularly to the throbbing movement of the mind by which a yogi meditates. Syllables uttered aloud do not constitute a mantra. Indeed, mantra is the great Shakti who brings the syllables to life. It is the awareness of inner unity. And in this statement, which, you know, is just, it just appeared in the course of this commentary, and I realized that what was happening inside me, that when the mantra disappeared and all I could feel was this throb, that this is what he was talking about, that it was this throb that was meditating me, and that this throb, this subtle pulsation, was the mantra, was the Shakti, the innate power inside the mantra, and that by repeating the mantra, by focusing on the mantra, I had freed that power, and it was taking my mind into a deeper state. This is actually a very subtle thing that when you recognize, when you experience it, as I know many of you have, as the mantra fills the mind with its Shakti, we start to experience this pulsation. And what Muktananda was saying is that pulsation is it's the footprint, so to speak, it's the breadcrumb trail of the divine primal pulsation in your mind. So when we say that mantra, the mind is mantra, what we're saying is that when you can tune into, through your mantra repetition, into this throbbing energy inside your own chitta, your own consciousness field, what you will experience is the deep truth that your own mind, your mind heart, your inner field of awareness literally throbs and vibrates with divine energy, with the deepest level of mantra, mantra as Shakti itself. So, again, let's practice. So as you think the mantra Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya Om, Om Namah Shivaya Om to yourself, see if you can be present at the place in the mind where the mantra dissolves, where Om Namah Shivaya Om stops. Feel that pulsation there. Feel that subtle vibration of Om Namah Shivaya Om. As a gentle throb inside the mind. And again, let the mantra come up. And at the end of the mantra, feel that not exactly stillness. It's a throbbing sensation in the mind. And recognize that this throbbing experience that arises at the end of the mantra is literally the pulsation of the primordial Shakti, the power of God, operating as your mind, as your chitta. See if you can feel the mantra, the subtle mantra that's left behind when Om Namah Shivaya Om has finished repeating itself. That space at the end of the last Om. Om Namah Shivaya Om, and then let yourself be. And again, as thoughts come up, when you're doing it, practice this way, as thoughts come up, go back to repeating the mantra. And then rest in this space at the end of the mantra. And let yourself feel that vibration. Literally as the pulsation of Shakti at the heart of the mantra. I want to give you one more piece of lore about mantra practice. And this is the way the tantras explain what actually happens as mantra penetrates more deeply into our consciousness. The tantras say that speech both arises from the silent source, we could call it the heart of the source code, and it arises through four levels. And when we practice a mantra, we literally take the sound forms, the matrika shakti that has succeeded in persuading us that we should identify with the separative thought forms that most of us have in our consciousness, what happens as we repeat the mantra is that it carries our consciousness back through these levels of speech, back to the source. And it works like this. Let's see if we can follow it in a meditative way. So I'm going to explain it to you briefly, and then we're going to practice with this understanding, with this idea. So in Sanskrit, these four levels of speech are called vaikari, which means literally very hard, and vaikari is articulated speech. I'm speaking now at the vaikari level, but we also can repeat the mantra at the vaikari level when we're repeating it silently, when we're articulating it in a kind of technical way, sounding it inwardly, at what we could call the initial or superficial level. And the second level of speech, the second level of mantra, is called madhyama. And this is what begins to happen to us when we start to turn the mantra over in the mind. When we begin to repeat the mantra, savor it, think of it as being offered into the heart, when we think of the mantra as, you know, being repeated by our teacher or our lover or by God, when we practice the mantra contemplatively, we actually begin to relate to the mantra through our subtle body. The level of vaikari is said to be in the tongue, and so when we're doing mantra on the vaikari level, you can do it now. You can mentally say Om Namah Shivaya with the feeling that the mantra is rolling around in your mouth. Om Namah Shivaya, Om, it vibrates in the tongue. You can feel it in the roof of your mouth. Om Namah Shivaya, Om. And you find when you're repeating it at that level that the sounds of the mantra are quite distinct. Om Namah Shivaya, Om. You're articulating them mentally. And just notice the way it feels to repeat Om Namah Shivaya, Om with your focus on the tongue and in the mouth. You might even feel the vibrations of the mantra rolling around in your mouth. It's kind of cool. Now, as the mantra goes to the madhyama level, what the texts say is that it then goes into the throat. My own experience is that it actually goes into the heart. So let's say that now as we repeat Om Namah Shivaya in a contemplative way, with the feeling of allowing it to go deeper into the second level of subtlety, into the madhyama. Madhyama means little, I mean, sorry, means middle. It's the place between externalized, articulated speech and the deep speech that is wordless. So this middle level, the madhyama level, is when you're turning over Om Namah Shivaya Om in the heart. And what I'd like to suggest that we do is actually have the feeling that we are offering Om Namah Shivaya Om into the heart. And you can even imagine that your heart is an altar. Literally inside your heart is an altar, and I like to think of it as being made of golden light. And perhaps on the altar there's a picture or a statue or a flower or a candle, a flame, or perhaps nothing. And you're going to inwardly sound the mantra with the feeling that you're placing the syllables of the mantra inside the heart on the altar of the heart. Perhaps you imagine a flame inside on the altar, on the heart altar. And the mantra is being offered into the flame. And perhaps as you feel Om Namah Shivaya Om being poured into the flame in your heart, just notice how it affects your inner body. The syllables of the mantra are not so clearly articulated. It's more that you're pouring the mantra energy, the kind of, let's say, murmur or rumble of the mantra into the heart altar. Just let it fill your heart, fill your inner body. And as the mantra Om Namah Shivaya Om vibrates in the heart, vibrates in the subtle body, this is when you start to notice that feelings are arising, perhaps emotions, perhaps love, perhaps a sense of pressure or melting or some subtle sensations inside your torso, inside your heart center. And now we're going to let the mantra sink further into our consciousness. And this is when, as you're saying the mantra Om Namah Shivaya Om to yourself, you literally feel it starting to dissolve. And in this practice, I'd like to ask you to allow your consciousness, allow your awareness to float down to the area around the solar plexus, the area around the navel. This is the part of the subtle body where it's said the third level of the mantra, the deeper level of the mantra, which is called Pashyanti, is located. And the word Pashyanti means sprout. So at this level of speech, the mantra is no longer a differentiated sound. It's a pure feeling. It's a pure throb. So you can offer Om Namah Shivaya Om into the solar plexus. And see if you can feel the sounds of the mantra becoming a pulsation, a throb inside your inner body around the navel. So that Om Namah Shivaya Om now is not so much the distinct words of the mantra, but more of a feeling that's expanding and contracting, that's expanding outward and then being breathed back inward as you sense the vibrations of the mantra rumbling in the area of your solar plexus and your navel. So Om Namah Shivaya Om has started out in the mouth, sounding distinctly, moved down into the heart where the syllables begin to slur and you begin to feel Om Namah Shivaya Om more as an energy, as a felt sense in the heart. And now you allow it to descend deeper into the navel, into the area behind the navel. And you may have to take it on faith that the mantra is coming with you through your intention. Because as the mantra descends to this level, to the Pashyanti level, very often the mantra disappears. And here, as your attention is centered in the navel region, you simply feel the sense of being, of presence, that's the heart of the mantra. It throbs, it pulsates. It's wordless. But here, at this level of consciousness, at this level of the body, at the Pashyanti level, as you meditate here, this is where your intuitive awareness begins to give you deep answers to the questions of your life. As the mantra descends from the tongue down into the heart and then into the region of the solar plexus, the wisdom and knowledge encoded in the mantra begins to infuse itself into the deeper recesses of your consciousness, and you begin to know things. As many of you experience, you begin to know things that come from a deeper level, from a deeper center. So just let yourself feel the mantra vibrating in the navel, in the inner body. Not in the navel on the front of the body, but in this whole part of the body behind the navel. The area that's often called the third chakra. This is when the mantra descends to this level, to Pashyanti, there's often an experience. If you remember the old EST trainings, they would often ask at a certain point, did you get it? Meaning, did you get the meaning of life? And there would often be an experience of just, oh, you understand something. You don't understand it in words, you get it. This is what happens at this level, Pashyanti, as mantra descends deeper into the intuitive level of consciousness. The gift of the mantra is the kind of knowing that appears from your gut, as it were, where answers come that don't have anything to do with the mind. And don't have anything to do with the emotions that are from deep within. And finally, at a certain point, the mantra will go past this level and simply open up into pure, spacious silence, into absolute stillness. And the mantra will land you in a state of God consciousness, which is called para, the level of supreme speech, which is silence, which is the vast vibrating silence at your core. And at this stage, which it's my hope arises for all of you, at this stage, the mantra literally dissolves into its divine source, and you actually have the recognition of what it really means to say that mantra is not different than the goal of the mantra. So we're going to close in a few minutes, and you're going to receive homework and some questions. And I'm going to ask you this week, and for the next few minutes, to actually practice the mantra at these three levels. Practice the mantra with a sense of your awareness in the mouth and the tongue. Practice the mantra in the heart. And then practice the mantra, letting it descend into the navel region. And feel how it feels to really let these sounds go deeper and deeper into your body, into the subtlety of your inner consciousness. It's really my deepest wish for all of you that you allow the mantra to keep on descending deeper and deeper into your awareness. That you allow the mantra to teach you from inside. That you go on experimenting with it. Repeating it with the feeling that it's being spoken to you by the loved heart of the universe. Imagining that all beings everywhere are repeating it. Feeling that you're sitting on top of a mountain and hearing it coming to you from all sides. Offering it into your own heart. Imagining the mantra in letters of light. Let the mantra play with you and let yourself play with the mantra. Understand that it really is a time release capsule of grace. That the mantra is like a guru, that as you internalize it more and more deeply, will start to speak to you, will start to kindle states of wisdom in you, and will protect you on every level, protect you in the most mundane ways, and in the end, protect you from that sense of duality that's keeping us from realizing who and what we really are. So with great love and in our shared connection to the grace that flows to us through this mantra and through our intentions for experiencing the very depth of our potential as human beings and divine beings, I just want to say again and again, thank you for being present with us, for practicing so beautifully, for imbibing the mantra, for your insight, for your love, and especially for your aspiration, which shines so deeply through every communication and every one of these calls. Have a fabulous week. Stay in touch. Tons of love. Namaste.